Raymond's relentless proselytizing about Rosie was part of a larger pattern of his leadership. He chose his own metrics. He declared that other metrics were wrong. He delivered profits, and he ignored criticism. That worked well enough when the subject was Exxon's increasingly strong quarterly profit performance, in comparison to peers. It worked less well when the subject was Exxon's ability to find enough new oil and gas to replace the hundreds of millions of barrels the corporation pumped and sold every year. As profitable as Raymond was making Exxon by the late 1990s, he struggled increasingly with a challenge that had never shadowed John D. Rockefeller: how to keep the corporation's oil reserves, the foundation of its business, from shrinking. The Cold War's end initially promised new bounty for Western oil corporations. Vast reserves did initially open for bidding in the former Soviet Union, Africa, and elsewhere. But it did not take long for the opening to become constricted. Raymond concluded by the late 1990s that while there was plenty of oil in the ground worldwide, the amount that Exxon could access might make it difficult over time to replace the vast quantities the corporation pumped each year. Exxon produced about 585 million barrels of oil and gas liquids in 1997. The reason involved the persistence of resource nationalism, or the inclination of governments that owned oil and natural gas to maintain control of their treasure. The business models of the major international oil companies such as Exxon, Chevron, Royal Dutch, Shell, and British Petroleum, and the prices that their shares commanded on Wall Street and on the London Exchange, depended in part on the size of the underlying trove of oil and gas the corporations could claim to own. Booked reserves, or equity oil, referred to those proven reserves that a corporation controlled legally and could exploit for sale in future years. In the world's wealthy free-market political economies, the United States, Norway, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, virtually all of the oil available was equity oil, in the sense that any company that found it and acquired it could own it legally under contract, in a manner akin to property rights. Exxon and its peers could display such equity reserves to shareholders as proved or booked oil under regulatory and accounting rules enforced in the United States by the Securities and Exchange Commission. The size of these booked reserves allowed shareholders to estimate future profits with relatively high confidence. Equity oil was fundamental to Exxon's stock market valuation, just as the number of shopping malls or office buildings owned by a real estate company would be fundamental to its market value. Before the 1970s, Exxon, BP, and other large oil companies owned and operated large oil and gas fields in Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran, Venezuela, and elsewhere. Rising anti-colonialism and nationalism stoked a period of upheaval that caused them to lose major properties. The twin anti-American oil embargoes of the 1970s signaled the arrival of the new era. The embargoes coincided with the rise of a price cartel, the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, which served the interests of oil-producing governments. In 1979, the Iranian Revolution's philosophy of Islamic self-determination advanced the spread of anti-Western political attitudes in Middle Eastern capitals. Populist leaders of oil-producing governments competed to prove themselves as resource nationalists, proud owners of their own geological wealth, and unwilling to allow foreign corporations to possess a single barrel. Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran, Venezuela, Algeria, Libya, and other governments all seized back oil and gas fields from Western corporations, including Exxon. The expropriations decimated Exxon's holdings and rates of daily oil production. By the late 1990s, Exxon and the other large private oil and gas companies based in the free market United States and Europe owned less than 20% of the world's oil reserves. In 1973, Exxon had produced just over 6.5 million barrels of oil and gas liquids per day from its worldwide properties. By the late 1990s, that figure had fallen by more than two-thirds. "The corporation spent much of this period struggling with the issue," Lee Raymond recalled. "We lost our equity position in the Middle East, where 60% of the world's proved oil reserves were located. The most fundamental question facing the corporation was, what's that mean for the company?" Even the most nationalistic governments might welcome Western companies as technology partners and hire them strictly as contractors to drill, produce, and refine oil and gas, as a homeowner might hire out a contractor to renovate a house. Such fee-for-service contracts could be the basis of a profitable business. Schlumberger and Halliburton were examples of companies that built lucrative franchises in this way. But deals of this kind stopped short of allowing the contractor to own any oil beneath the ground. Exxon's business had always been premised on owning oil, which required greater risk-taking but promised much higher profit than a contractor could hope to earn. By the 1990s, virtually all of the oil in the Middle East was off-limits to corporate ownership because of resource nationalism. The strategic problem facing Exxon was that, apart from new frontiers in offshore ocean waters or above the Arctic Circle, there did not seem to be much new oil or gas to discover in territory controlled by wealthy free market countries. Elsewhere, in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the former Soviet Union, oil geologists advised, there were still major discoveries to be made. But, inconveniently, much of this new oil seemed likely to be found in places where governments would be skeptical about allowing Western corporate ownership. Notwithstanding communism's fall, many politicians in developing countries, responding to popular feeling, still held that it was neither just nor necessary to give away ownership of oil and gas reserves, least of all to Western capitalists like Lee Raymond. Although Exxon jockeyed for position as the world's largest privately owned oil company, by the late 1990s it ranked only 14th or lower on a worldwide basis if the list included government-owned companies such as Saudi Aramco, Kuwait Petroleum, Gazprom of Russia, Petrobras of Brazil, or Sonangol of Angola. These state-owned grants not only showed large inventories of booked reserves, they also increasingly prowled outside their borders to compete with Exxon to capture next-generation oil reserves in Africa, Asia, and Latin America.